Yet despite his being equally kind to everyone, he has graciously come before me while I am ending my life, for I am his unflinching servitor. Purport. The Supreme Lord, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, although equal to everyone, is still more inclined to his unflinching devotee, who is completely surrendered and knows no one else as his protector and master. Having unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord as one's protector, friend, and master is the natural condition of eternal life. A living entity is so made by the will of the Almighty that he is most happy when placing himself in a condition of absolute dependence. The opposite tendency is the cause of fall down. The living entity has the tendency of falling down by dint of misidentifying himself as fully independent to lord it over the material world. The root cause of all troubles is there in false egotism. One must draw towards the Lord in all circumstances. The appearance of Lord Krishna at the deathbed of Bhishmaji is due to his being an unflinching devotee of the Lord. Arjuna had some bodily relation with Krishna because the Lord happened to be his maternal cousin, but Bhishma had no such bodily relation. Therefore, the cause of attraction was due to the intimate relation of the soul. Yet because the relation of the body is very pleasing and natural, the Lord is more pleased when he is addressed as the son of Maharaj Nanda, the son of Yashoda, the lover of Radharani. This affinity by bodily relation with the Lord is another feature of reciprocating loving service with the Lord. Bhishma Dev is conscious of this sweetness of transcendental humor, and therefore he likes to address the Lord as Vijaya Sakhe, Partha Sakhe, etc., exactly like Nanda Nandana or Yashoda Nandana. The best way to establish our relation in transcendental sweetness is to approach him through his recognized devotees. One should not try to establish the relation directly. There must be a via medium which is transparent and competent to lead us to the right path. Srila Prabhupada writes here that having unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord as one's protector, friend, and master is the natural condition of eternal life. I'd like to come and sit inside and make some space for everyone to... Please come forward a little bit and let everyone sit there. Please come forward as there'll probably be some more people coming. This kind of problem is very good when we don't have enough space. There are so many people coming. It's much better than having the problem of no one coming. There are always problems, but this kind of problem is better. Just like Matsya Avatar. You can start off with a small place and then it gets... You have to get a bigger place and then that becomes too small and then you get another bigger place. Like this. ISKCON should expand like Matsya Avatar. But bhakti rests on faith. Shadhavanjan hoi bhakti adhikari. The qualification to enter into bhakti is faith. And it is difficult, especially in the modern age, for us to have unflinching faith. Here the term is given, ekanta bhakta. Bhishma Dev describes himself as an ekanta bhakta. Means, ek, we all know this word, there's no other interest, no diversion, but bhakti. Such a person is called an ekanta bhakta, ekanishta bhakta. He has no other thought in life but to serve Krishna. Unflinching faith. For us to get that faith, especially in the modern age, people immediately ask, oh, why should I believe this? How can we believe in God? Actually, it's very easy to believe in God, but our modern education makes it very difficult. Otherwise, it's very easy. The whole modern life makes it, it's all set up so that everyone can be a great demon, asura. That word is given, asura. That Dvo bhuto sarge loke smin daiva asura evacha Vishnu bhakti smito daiva asura stadviparyaya. There are two kinds of people. One is called deva, godly. They have faith in deva deva jagatpati, the supreme personality of Godhead. And the opposite, they're called asura. They don't have faith. So naturally, people have, at least, it may not be very clear, but naturally people have the tendency to have faith in God, especially if we're living in the lap of nature and we see the sun, the moon, the activities of the wind and the rain and the crops growing and the different species or the different flora and fauna. And it's very easy for someone who's even a little bit pious to understand that this whole cosmic manifestation of which we are situated in one small part is going on by the hand of a greater controller than us. But in modern life, light comes from a switch, water comes from a tap. And if it's hot, then you put on the air conditioner. If it's cold, you turn on a heater and you have hot water from the geyser. And in this way, we think we are controlling. And we're taught in school that everything comes into being by chance. And because we have faith in that, we call it science, although actually it's just blind faith, because no one ever saw anything coming into being by chance. But we have blind faith that even though we wouldn't believe that even this could come into being by chance, but due to our advanced education, we believe that the whole universe has come into being by chance. So, if you're going to be a fool, why not be a big fool? Yet, if you believe this comes into being by chance, you're a fool. If you believe the whole universe comes into being by chance, there your foolishness is expanded up to the universal level. Fool of the universe. Why just be a backyard fool? You can be a universal fool. So this is being taught, and people go, how can we believe in God? You would tell, hey, this came into being by chance. No, someone made it. And the whole universe came into being by chance. Oh, yes, yes. We cannot believe. So faith. Naturally, one should have faith in a higher power. You may not know who that is, but naturally, we should have faith. It doesn't require. People say, well, we never saw God, or where's the scientific proof? But you don't have to have scientific proof to understand that this came into being not by chance. It was made by not one person, but by a group of people. There was some specific purpose, and so much activity went into making this. So we don't say, if I tell you this was manufactured in a factory, we don't say prove it. We just accept, yeah, it's obvious, isn't it? So it should be obvious that the whole universe has come into being under some direction and control, but because we are greatly foolish, we cannot accept the hand of the Supreme Person, which is behind everything. Actually, not even his hand, only by his wish everything comes into being, only by his desire. So that faith in the Supreme Lord as one's protector, friend, and master is the natural condition of eternal life. That is our Sanatan Dharma, to be sheltered at the lotus feet of Krishna. We may
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
So we may protest, why is it like this? We don't accept. But as Prabhupada states in the next statement after this about unflinching faith, a living entity is so made by the will of the Almighty that he is most happy when placing himself in a condition of absolute dependence. Again, in modern society, just the opposite is being taught. Be independent. Stand up on your own two feet. Be a success. Show yourself. But this ignores the reality that we are dependent. We are not independent. We are subject to the laws of nature. For instance, we have to die. The independent enjoyers, they don't like to. Why are you talking about dying? Well, it's a fact. Yeah, but in the middle we can enjoy ourselves. We can enjoy ourselves now independently. But the fact that we have to die means we're not independent. Our enjoyment. Let's go and drink a few beers. So you can drink. First thing, you're not independent. You have to get the money to buy the beer. So you have to go and work and become dependent on someone to get that money. And then because we're not supremely independent. For those of us who are brought up in beer drinking culture, like myself, I hope most of you probably haven't got involved in that. But drink beer at night and wake up the next morning with a horrible headache. That's what happens. It's called a hangover. So we're not independent. We may think I shall enjoy myself by drinking beer, although it's no enjoyment actually. And then in the morning you wake up with it, there's an immediate karmic reaction. There's much more to come afterwards also. But the immediate reaction is headache, nasty headache. So where is the independence? This is foolishness. It makes sense to have faith in a higher benevolent power. To defy that and to deny that, we may think that, well, I'm so great and I'm so wonderful, but we are controlled. Even we may deny that there is any God in control, but still we are controlled. We are controlled by nature. We cannot control. We don't choose what kind of body we get. We don't. It becomes so cold. People are complaining it's very cold in Bangalore. We don't have any means to adjust the temperature of the air outside. We just have to wait. It's not in our control. When the tsunami comes, we can't say, oh, just wait a few minutes till we make some technology to control it. There's no controlling. You should see, we are controlled. When someone has dysentery, then at that time he should understand, I'm not in control. We can't even control the movements of our intestines. So this may be an amusing example, but it's an appropriate example, isn't it? We're not in control. Where's the control? Someone else is in control. We learn from Shastra that in control of this material world is one lady called Durga. And she acts as the shadow of Govinda. Srishti, Stiti, Pralaya, Sadhana, Shaktireka, Chayeva, Yasya, Bhuvanani, Bibharti, Durga. This material world is created, maintained and destroyed, and it all goes on under the jurisdiction of Durga Devi, who acts as the shadow potency, like a shadow. She of Govinda. He indicates and she operates. So she is controlling under the direction of Govinda. Not to accept this is the cause of fall down. Why are we not happy? Because we're striving in the wrong way. We have the tendency to fall down as marginal potency. Tatastha Shakti. We have the tendency to fall in this material world just because of this tendency of thinking, I do not need Krishna. So just this faith, Jeev Krishna Das Abhishas Karleta Ardukanan. The solution to all problems. I have got the solution to all problems. Better than an astrologer, better than a Vastu expert, better than a financial advisor, better than a doctor. I can give you the solution to all problems. You already have it. I got it from someone who knows, and he got it from someone else who knows. And ultimately, it was got from Krishna, who is the solution to all problems. What is the solution to all problems? Jeev Krishna Das A Vishvas. Simply to accept that I'm not this body anyway, so I don't really have any contact with any of these problems. I'm only considering it problems because I'm identifying with this body. But I'm a servant of Krishna, and Krishna has no problem. We don't find Krishna taking pills or this, what's that called? That balm, tiger balm. There's no such thing for Krishna. Krishna is simply happy. The spiritual world is the situation of actual happiness. And this material world, because it's a perverted reflection, means however much we try to be happy without Krishna, it doesn't work. Prabhupada asks Satsrup Maharaj, you write a book called Things Without Krishna Don't Work. You say, well, the fan works, the light works, but the ultimate aim that we shall buy electric lights and fans and all this accumulated technology, we shall be happy. It is a hope against hope. It doesn't work. All the technology in the world cannot serve to make the jiva even slightly happy, because it's all external to the jiva. The jiva's relationship is with Krishna. Jeev Krishna Das Evishvas Karleta or Dukana. If we simply understand this, then no more unhappiness. It's the solution to all problems, as is being demonstrated here in Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the recounting of Krishna's wonderful pastimes with his devotees, and showing how his devotees, they have no problem. Here is described Bhishma Dev, where we could say he was a man of the world. Even though he didn't get married, he was involved in the world, and he went through so many different situations, but ultimately he had no problem, because throughout his life he had ekanta bhakti, unflinching devotion to Krishna. Now we may ask, well, how is it that Bhishma, if he's a devotee of Krishna, he was fighting against Krishna and trying to kill him? And Krishna also, even though he promised not to fight, he became famous as Sarangapani, he was Partha Sarathi, and then he got another name by taking up the wheel of the chariot, part of the wheel of the chariot, to attack Bhishmadev. So that doesn't sound right. Well, I'm your great devotee, I love you very much, and now I'm going to attack you and to kill you. It doesn't seem to be right that Bhishmadev is shooting arrows. He loves Krishna so much that he's shooting arrows at him. And Krishna, he's coming to furious with the wheel of the chariot to attack him. But how? Where is the love? It seems like the opposite, doesn't it? I love you so much, I'm going to shoot you in the head. Where? Actually, sometimes that happens, that lovers, their parents deny them, and so they drink poison together and die, or something like this. A man, in Andhra Pradesh, it's very common that a man, he's a farmer, he has so many debts and all the crops fail, so he kills all his family and then he kills himself. We shall all die together. But Krishna and Bhishma, their relationship is one of love, but it has to be understood very carefully, otherwise it won't be understood. We see here that Bhishma Dev, the person who he was attempting to kill, has come before him and he's saying, oh, he loves me so much, he's come to see me at the time of my death because I'm his unflinching devotee. So actually there wasn't any enmity between Krishna and Bhishma Dev, even though it appeared like that. They were fighting. How is this to be understood? This is the Kshatriya Bhav, of course. Krishna and Bhishma Dev, their relationship is not like that of people within this material world, but relationships within this material world, being the perverted reflections of those in spiritual existence, can serve to help us understand to some extent what are the pure spiritual relationships between Krishna and his devotees. So Kshatriyas, they like to fight. They become enlivened. Sukhina Kshatriya Pata Labante Yudhamidrisham. Krishna told Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, the Kshatriyas, you're a Kshatriya Pata. You should become happy at the opportunity to fight. That is, they like it. Just like you'll see that the bulls, if you've seen in the morning, you don't know because you're all city people, but if you see in the countryside early morning, the farmer comes and puts the yoke on the bull to take the plant. They like it, they got a big strong body and they want to use it. They like that they'll be pulling. Now we're going out to pull the plow. Or the sportsmen, they like that. Now we're going to play a difficult match. They like the challenge. And in the challenge, you could say it's unpleasant. I mean, how fast do they throw this cricket ball? What's the world champion? How fast do they throw it? Must be more than 100 kilometers an hour, right? How much? 130 kilometers an hour. Would you like to have a cricket ball thrown at you 130 kilometers an hour? I wouldn't. I mean, when I was a kid, I had a cricket ball thrown at me fast, and it hit my... I was LBW, and I couldn't walk for a week. I'm sure it wasn't 130 kilometers an hour. Maybe it was half that. But the professional cricket players, they like the challenge, isn't it? Now we're going in for a tough, difficult... They know it's going to be a difficult match, but they like that. It's a challenge. So Krishna and Bhishma, that was their relationship. The Virya Rasa, they're heroes. So they like to... they're fighting. When they're fighting, they're definitely... You don't fight without getting angry. But underneath that, there was this Ekanta Bhakti. This, just as Bhishma Dev had Ekanta Bhakti, one-pointed, pure devotion for Krishna. So Krishna reciprocated in the same way with Bhishma Dev. Their bond was so strong. That's why Duryodhana was saying to Bhishma, he was trying to incite him, because you say, this Bhishma, I'm lucky he's on my side. He's a great fighter, great strategist, general. But the only problem is, he's favorable to the Pandavas. So how am I going to get him to fight properly for me? And he was goading Karna and Karna especially was goading Bhishma Dev, and Bhishma Dev, he scolded Karna so badly. Karna said, "Okay, you fight. I'm not going to fight. You fall down, then I'll come. I'm not going to fight with you." So Bhishma and Karna, they had a very bad relationship because Karna didn't like the Pandavas at all, and Bhishma loved them. So how was he going to fight properly? So eventually, Duryodhana goaded Bhishma Dev so much that he gave this promise that, "All right, you think I'm not fighting properly? Now I'm going to fight. And I'm going to kill that Arjuna just to show that I'm not partial. Either I'll kill him or Krishna will have to break his promise." So Krishna became famous for breaking his promise. Another thing they accuse him. But that is his glory. His glory that he breaks his promise to protect his devotee. Kauntaya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. That, okay, I promised that my devotee will never be vanquished. I also promised I won't fight in this battle. So which promise am I going to break? For Krishna, there's no question that thinking, I have to break him immediately. This rascal, he's trying to kill my devotee Arjuna. Immediately, jump off the chariot, take the wheel. So all this, Krishna becomes glorious. That he became glorious by breaking his promise. That he breaks his promise that people may accuse him of being immoral, but he's ready for that. He's attacking my devotee. What the hell, immoral? Let them accuse. So this is his glory. That he doesn't care for his good name as much as he cares for protecting his devotee. Therefore, he is bhakta-vatsal. This is his glory. He's accused. He is a thief. But he's not stealing from everyone. He doesn't come to your fridge and steal the butter. But he's stealing from the gopis because they have so much love for him. If we can have that thief steal our butter, then we shall be very fortunate. He's not a petty thief going around cutting people's pockets. Not like that, but he's stealing the butter from those who are pure devotees. He's dancing with the gopis, not with anyone. He doesn't go to this Bangalore disco and dance there. But he's dancing with the gopis. Not anyone. Even he's not, you don't find he's dancing with Lakshmi. She wanted to join Rasleela. Nope, can't come. Even not with Lakshmi. What is the qualification to have this relationship with Krishna? This is being described in Srimad Bhagavatam. This is Bhagavat Purana. There's also Vishnu Purana. But Bhagavat Purana especially describes Krishna, who is Swayam Bhagavan Krishna Ekale Isha. Nandatmaja, what is that? Rasika Shekha. He is Swayam Bhagavan, that we find from Srimad Bhagavatam. He is the original personality of Godhead. Ekaleshwa, he is the one and only controller. And at the same time, he is the son of Nanda Maharaj and the enjoyer of the decoration in the Ras Lila. So here in Bhagavatam, we find these relationships very difficult to understand. Who can understand how Bhishma and Krishna, there is a relationship of ekanta bhakti. There's no disturbance in their relationship, even their fighting. That Krishna enjoyed that Bhishma's arrows are entering his body. Who can enjoy? Kshatriya can enjoy. They'll enjoy fighting. And Krishna in the mood of a transcendental fighter, or rather the mood of a fighter in this world, is borrowed from Krishna's enjoying as a fighter. He is the fountainhead of all rasas. So the kshatriya enjoying fighting that is borrowed or that is originating from Krishna's enjoying fighting. So he's enjoying the Bhishma Devi's fight. He's aiming arrows also at Krishna and at Arjuna. And Krishna's also, those arrows are piercing his transcendental body. And Krishna, in the spirit of a kshatriya, is, oh, my devotee is shooting arrows at me. Just like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the example of in lovemaking, there may be biting between the partners, which is painful. And it may cause even blood to flow, but that is experienced as enjoyable. Because it's exchange, it's an exchange of love. It's superficially painful, but it's an exchange of love. So Krishna doesn't allow anyone and everyone to fight with him. But especially, he went to fight with Bhishma Devi. And as you all know, just at that time, by the arrangement of Krishna's Yogamaya potency, that it took all day for Bhishma Devi to put Arjuna in such a difficult situation where he was hopeless and only Krishna could protect him. So Krishna went running towards Bhishma Devi, just like a lion runs to get its prey. And just at that time, sunset and the day is over. So Krishna fulfilled Bhishma's promise. He broke his own promise to fulfill Bhishma's promise. Bhishma promised that I shall fight so severely that either Arjuna will be killed or Krishna will have to break his promise. So Krishna, I have to fulfill my devotee's promise. So in this way, Krishna showed that his devotee is more dear to him than his very self. Because rather than keeping his own promise, which among kshatriyas, that's a big thing. If kshatriya gives a promise, then it's totally against kshatriya code to break your promise. So either Krishna had to break his promise or Bhishma had to. So Krishna, he upheld Bhishma Dev's promise. He's showing how much dear Krishna's devotees are, more dear to him than his very self. As he told Uddhava, Natata me priyatama atma yone na shankaraha nacha sankarsana na shriya naivatma cha yata bhavan. He said to Uddhava that, my dear Uddhava, you are so dear to me, you are more dear to me than Brahma, who is born from my body. He's my son, direct son. Or Shankara, Shiva, you are more dear to me than Shiva. Atma yoni na Shankara, nyacha sankarsana, my brother Balaram, you are more dear to me than Balaram. You are more dear to me than Lakshmi, my wife. And you are more dear to me than me. I love you more than I love myself. This he's saying to Uddhava. Uddhava was the greatest devotee outside Vrindavan. Krishna sent him to Vrindavan to get some lessons in bhakti. He's such a great devotee that Krishna says, I love you more than all the other devotees, and I love you even more than I love myself. And please just take this message to Vrindavan. And then Uddhava understood that Krishna sent me to send this message. Actually, he's sending me to learn what is bhakti, because I don't know. I have to learn from the gopis of Vrindavan, from all the Vrajavasis, and especially the gopis of Vrindavan. So what is being described here? Bhishma Dev is expressing his appreciation for Krishna. Krishna, Prabhupada notes here in the purport that Krishna has different names. Vijaya Saka. Krishna's one name is Vijay. He is Vijay. He is victory. But that name is also associated with Arjuna. So Krishna is the friend of Vijaya, friend of Arjuna, Partha Sakha, the friend of Partha. Krishna is also called Krishna Sakha, the friend of Krishna. What does that mean? Because Arjuna is also called Krishna. One name for Arjuna is Krishna, because he is blackish in bodily feature. So one name of Krishna is Krishna Sakha, the friend of Krishna. And even Kunti Devi addressed Krishna as Krishna Sakha. So Krishna, he likes to be addressed by names in relationships to his devotees, because Krishna's devotees are more dear to Krishna than himself. So if he hears the name Nandana, if he hears the name Parameshwara or Ishvara, Swayam Bhagavan, alright, okay. That's alright. Okay, very nice. What do you want? Alright, you take your benediction. But if he hears the name Nandanandana, Yashoda Nandana, Partha Sakha, oh, he becomes very pleased. Oh, he's recognized, my devotees. So this is the system, that Krishna, if he hears his own name, Krishna, he's known as Swanama Priya, he likes to hear his own name. People think, why, someone's asking, why you chant Hare Krishna over and over? Why does Krishna likes it? He likes it, because the name of Krishna is very nice. It's very sweet. So Krishna, he also likes to hear his name. Krishna also likes to see his form. Krishna is so attractive, he attracts all living beings except us fools in this material world. And he even attracts himself. When Krishna saw in the pillar at Dwaraka, is so wonderful gem that it acts as a mirror. And Krishna one time became stunned. What is this? So beautiful. It's me! Oh, but I can't enjoy it because everyone else can enjoy it. I'm cheated. They're all enjoying. All my devotees are looking at me, but I can't enjoy it. Okay, I'm going to become a devotee. So he came as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to enjoy, to appreciate his own beauty and what it is to be a devotee. So Krishna likes to hear his name, but he especially likes to hear his name in relation to the names of his devotees. Nandana, Nandana, you don't just think of, I'm the Supreme God, but I'm holding the shoes of Nanda Maharaj on my head. I'm Yashoda Nandana. Yashoda Mai, she chastises Krishna. Krishna becomes very happy. Who can understand? You'll see the picture, this common picture of Yashoda Mai holding Krishna by the ear and Krishna looking. Have you seen that picture? Krishna looking, ooh, very, very sad. No, my man. He runs in fear from the stick of Mother Yashoda. So that fear that Krishna feels, that is far more pleasing to him than the pleasure he feels from unlimited. How many devotees of the Lord? Unlimited. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda. They're all offering prayers to Krishna. But more than all the prayers of all the devotees offering in love and reverence to Krishna is Mother Yashoda holding his ear, pulling it all, or holding the stick, and Krishna's feeling the fear. So that fear is very pleasing to Krishna, because that anger of Mother Yashoda is motivated by love so strong that even when she sees the universe in his mouth, she thinks, what's that doing there? she's starting, this is God. Oh, actually my son is Narayana. And then Krishna cries, I'm hungry, and she forgets it all. Because her love for Krishna is so strong that even if she thinks, even if she becomes aware that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, her love for him as my son is so strong that it completely covers her consciousness of being, of his being the Supreme Lord. So that love, which is out of the maya of thinking I am the mother of Krishna, she chases him with a stick to punish him, thinking that, well, if he grows up, he'll be like this, he'll be such a bad boy, so I have to punish him. So that love, Krishna becomes so pleased. And this is Bhagavad Purana. This is what Bhagavad Purana is teaching. Not easy to understand. It's actually not possible to understand at all. Mother Yashoda doesn't understand it. She doesn't sit down and listen. She's not discussing Vedanta. But she's churning the milk for Krishna to make nice butter, thinking that if I make nice butter, then maybe he'll stop stealing from other homes. She's concerned. Like, Krishna, you should grow up to be a good boy, not a bad boy. So this is the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. All philosophy is there. But that philosophy culminates in Mother Yashoda chasing Krishna with a stick. This is you get the highest philosophy. Kim tad brahma kim adhyatma? Is the absolute truth personal or impersonal? So many different discussions. What is pratyaksha, anuman? We were discussing that. These discussions should be there. But at the end, we simply desire to remember Krishna being chased with a stick by Mother Yashoda and worship Mother Yashoda. Worship the great... This Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted that he was discussing with, in the house of Vallabh Bhatta, who's also a great Vaishnava philosopher. When he came there at Prayag, then Vallabh Bhatta took him to his house on the other side of the Triveni at Arayal ground. And there in his house there was one great devotee, Raghupati Upadhyay. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him so many questions. And one question is that what's the end of all philosophy and worship? And what is the ultimate? What should we worship? So Raghupati Upadhyay, he answered that, what is that? Shrutim Itare, Smitim Apare. How does that verse go? Anyone know that? That Bharate Bhaya Bhitam Aham Nanda. Ahamiha Nandam Vande Yasya Linde Param Brahma. That some people, they worship the Shruti. And some people they follow the Smriti, and others they study the Mahabharat, being very afraid of material existence. They study different shastras. But as far as I am concerned, I am worshipping who? Krishna? No, Nanda Maharaj. Ahamiha Nandam Vande. Because in his courtyard, the supreme absolute truth, who is the goal of all the Vedas, is running around like a little boy. This is the ultimate. That Krishna, he should be, he is the supreme person. But then you find who Krishna is worshipping. That's even higher. This Devi, she asks her husband, Shiva, Lord Mahadev, that what is the highest kind of worship? We see people are worshipping you, they're worshipping me, they're worshipping Vishnu, they're worshipping snakes, they're worshipping Sai Baba. What is the topmost kind of worship? And Lord Shiva, what did he say? Famous verse. Aradhananam sarvesham Vishnu aradhanam param. No hesitation, immediately again. Of all the types of worship, that of Vishnu is the topmost. But there's something more. Tasmat parataram devi tadiyanam samarchanam. You find out what he is worth. He is the topmost object of worship. And he is worshipping his devotees. So if you worship his devotees, that's even higher. So this is being given here, that we can't go to Krishna. We all have our eternal relationship with Krishna, but that we are not Bhishma, we are not Yashoda, we are not Nanda Maharaj, and we can't take their position. We can't think, I shall directly become Nanda Maharaj. That's another kind of Mayavad. But rather recognizing Krishna's, the setup which Krishna has, all his great devotees are there. If we can become the servant of Krishna by assisting those who are serving Krishna, that will be our perfection. So a devotee doesn't, or one who's aspiring to be a devotee, doesn't arrogantly think that, well, I'm going to become Mother Yashoda. But if I can be a servant of Mother Yashoda, she can give me some order. Just go over there and bring that cow and take the milk we'll give to Krishna. If we can become a servant of the devotees who are serving Krishna, that shall be our perfection. This point Srila Prabhupada is making in this purport. Is there any question about this? No question. Everything understood. I didn't understand. It's not to be understood. You can't put down some mathematical formula and say, yes, this x squared plus y squared divided by 3xy equals Krishna. There's no such formula. There's no such thing. You have you have a loud voice. Just speak a little louder, and then everyone will hear you.
Little
louder still.
In English, we have this word called sadist.
Sadist is actually the pronunciation I know. It's this word is derived from the Marquis de Sade, who was a French writer and the original sadist, who wrote books about giving torture to others, and it's one kind of enjoyment. That's the etymology of the word, for your information.
Just trying to correlate that with some of the experience.
Where's the mic?
I just thought if you could throw some light on that, because
you think Mother Yashoda is a sadist?
No. Krishna's with Bhishma Dev. Trying to attack Bhishma Dev.
Is it?
No. That's quite different. It's not that by, you see, this rascal, the Marquis de Sade, he actually took pleasure in giving pain to others. That's called paradukha sukhi. Just like in the Bhagavatam, it's described, there is a hell that people go to for torturing. Just like if someone may capture a fly and pull the wing off. There's a hell for people like that. So Krishna's attacking Bhishma Dev with arrows. It's in a completely different category. It's not the giving pain in itself that is the pleasure. It's the challenge that they're fighting. That example is given that a king, he keeps a professional wrestler because the professional wrestler doesn't think, oh, this is the king. And he has to fight fully. Otherwise, he loses his job. Or the king also, he keeps a jester who makes jokes, mostly at the expense of the king. Because in the public court, everyone's, yes, Maharaj, ki jai ho. But just to get some relief, so he can laugh sometimes, he keeps a jester who makes jokes at his expense. That Prabhupada used to tell so many Gopal Ban stories. These are traditional stories in Bengal. So he told one day Gopal walked into the court and the king said, oh, Gopal, what's the difference between you and an ass? So Gopal walked towards the king, measuring his steps. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 steps, Your Highness. Very quick-witted. So the king also laughs. But if anyone else says that, his head gets chopped off. So he has the position to do that, but not everyone can do that. Krishna's fighting with the demons and he kills the demons. But he's fighting with Bhishma's that's Virya Ras. There's one exchange of heroism. They're in the mood that, no, I'm better than you. No, I'm better than you. I'll show you. But that's all, the substratum is transcendental love. That is to be understood. Anything? Yeah, pass the mic.
We see Bhishma Dev episode only in the end of Bhagavad Gita, and we see him as very great.
End of
Mahabharata as great devotee. Yeah. Are there any other instances where he shows his devotional service?
All through Mahabharata, everything, wherever Bhishma is mentioned, it's all Ekanta Bhakti. The Pandavas also. It's not everything they do, they're fully in contact with Krishna. It may appear to the non-devotee who reads Mahabharata that the Pandavas are just some kings who want a kingdom and Krishna's helping them. But actually, everything they do is for the pleasure of Krishna. Yudhishthira only wants to rule so that he can establish dharma as service to Krishna. And Krishna is with them all the time helping. So Bhishma is not, he's not forgetful of Krishna. He's doing everything to help the Pandavas because they're great devotees of Krishna. Everything is in relationship with Krishna. Just like you may see Prabhupada, you read in his earlier life, he was a businessman and making days pain lineament. But there, as Prabhupada said, there was never any time in my life when I ever forgot Krishna. So it may appear that he was an ordinary businessman, but actually everything he does is fully in connection with Krishna. That became apparent in his preaching pastime. So Bhishma's bhakti became apparent in his fighting pastime. But it was there all the time. It wasn't just arbitrary that Krishna exchanged his wonderful pastime with Bhishma. But because Bhishma is fully wrapped in pure devotion to Krishna, always, therefore Krishna exchanged with him like this. Or enjoyed this exchange with him like this. So it wasn't that Prabhupada was just an ordinary businessman, and then he by luck, when he went to the West, so many people came. But rather because throughout his whole life, and even life after life, he's a great, unparalleled devotee of Krishna. We may venture to say even more than Bhishma did. Then this wonderful thing happened. That it's not just by chance that the Krishna consciousness movement came from Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was just an ordinary devotee, and just out of some curiosity he went to America and then he was lucky. No. Prabhupada said once that when I see among my godbrothers so many were very learned, very austere, more than me, Prabhupada said. They had so much association with Guru Maharaj, his Guru Maharaj means, much more than me. So when I examine, I wonder, how is it that this wonderful thing of spreading Krishna conscious movement all over the world has come to me? And Prabhupada said, when I examine, I can see that the reason is that among all my godbrothers, I was the only one who had full faith in the order of our Guru Maharaj. Therefore, this has happened. Yasya deve parabhakti yata deve tata guru tasyaite katita hyata prakashante mahatmana. Everything comes. You have full faith in Krishna, full faith in Guru, then all the imports of the Vedic knowledge are with you. Everything comes, which is what Prabhupada is saying here in this purport. Also, that's the secret. The secret of success in spiritual life is satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master. When Prabhupada read this, he read this in the purport of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and that became the guiding light for his whole life. Then he remembered, oh, my Guru Maharaj ordered me, you should preach, in English. And then again, just shortly before Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada left this world, then Prabhupada at that time, Abhay Charanaravinda Das, wrote a letter that I'm a householder, I'm not living in the mud, I can't serve you in the way that so many of your disciples are serving you. Please tell me how I can serve you. He got the letter back that if you preach in English, that will be good for you and for us. He saw it's the same order. From the very first time Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur saw, even before he had been introduced or what his name is, before any words were spoken, the first thing he said, you should preach in English. So, and the last thing he said, you should preach in English. So he did it. It wasn't that he was just an ordinary devotee. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati just happened to say this. Immediately, of course, he recognized. Another time when Prabhupada was in his business life, if you want to call it that, and he was very expertly helping with the preaching activities in Bombay, preaching activities in Gauriya Math. This was 1930s, and the other devotees were saying to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati that why don't you ask him to just move in the mat and become a full-time devotee, because he's so expert. He can help us in so many ways. And said, no, there's no need. He will do everything by himself in due course of time. So he knew, he saw, and he did. So it wasn't that Prabhupada was just some ordinary devotee who, just by chance, he went to the West and then just by chance, everyone said, okay, we'll give up meat eating, gambling, illicit sex, and intoxication. Didn't work like that. People became Krishna conscious because Prabhupada was Krishna conscious. Actually, not because of philosophy or, of course, all these things, philosophy, chanting, prasadam was a major factor. But the main thing was because they saw that this Prabhupada, the Swamiji as they call him, they could understand that he is, even there's so much conditioned hippies, that they could understand this is someone very special. We want to be like him. So therefore they were ready to follow him. No one, the hippies, their pride, we are independent. We won't follow anyone. We've dropped out of society. We are rebels. They followed Prabhupada. What's this? Time up?
Another question.
We all have a little faith in Krishna, but how can we strive to achieve unflinching faith in Krishna? Jaha komal shraddha shri kanishta jan krame krame teho hoibe bhakta utam. Gradually. If we have little faith in Krishna, then we're classified as kanishta adhikari. But gradually we can become topmost devotee, which means unflinching faith. That is, by associating with devotees and following what they tell us. Why not have unflinching faith? What's the problem? Why? What don't you believe in? What do you doubt about Krishna? Tell me. Let's examine. What is the nature of your lack of faith? You have faith in Microsoft? You have faith in Baskin Robbins? What do you have faith in? You have faith in your tongue, your eyes, your ears, your nose? Whatever you have faith in is all useless. There's no reason not to have faith in Krishna. Simply foolishness. Because we are simply fools and rascals, therefore we don't have faith in Krishna. So Prabhupada very kindly came and told us what is our actual position. We are all fools and rascals. His great mercy. But we're meant not to be fools and rascals. We're meant to surrender to Krishna.
I don't think any sound's coming. You have to speak into the mic. Maharaj, generally pure devotees say that when we are servant of a servant of a servant and we are not qualified, we are healthy in humble state. But I understand.
No, it's not that when we are qualified, then we realize that we are the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. It's to be a servant of a servant of a servant of a servant of Krishna is not a disqualification, that is the highest qualification. In the material world, if you're the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of someone, that means that you're not highly qualified. But in spiritual life, you become the topmost qualification is to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant.
Generally, if I'm not qualified to serve, generally devotees used to say, I'm not able to serve. Even I understand Bhishma Dev is the Mahajan, but he said that I am an unflinching servant. Excuse his context for me. Generally, devotees will be in humble state. This Bhishma Dev statement is, I am an unflinching servant.
No, they may also sometimes say, Prabhupada also sometimes said, that I have no other. We may say, I have no other interest than to serve Krishna. We may say like that. Prabhupada said, and he's on the boat. He wrote that poem. Amitava nitya das tai karo eto ash. Toma binai ke acheyama. I am your eternal servant. Therefore I have such a great hope that without you, I have nothing, no one but you. So I may say also, that doesn't mean that we don't think that also, yes, I'm serving, but through the devotees. I may say, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Amar jivan sada pape rata nahika punya alesh. I'm in my whole life, I'm simply attached to sinful activities. There's not even a trace of piety. Then in another song he says, Ami Shananda Shukada Vashi Radhika Madhava Charana Dasi. I am a resident of Shananda Shukada Kunj. And he says, I am a maid servant. He's giving his, not even, he's in a male body apparently. I'm a Dasi of Radhika Madhava. So he reveals that also. Don't understand. I also don't understand. Again, it's not something that, you know, put away your calculus. Put away your algebra. It doesn't work here. When we're fully convinced that our computers and our calculus and all this cannot help us to understand Krishna, then we can make great advancement in understanding Krishna. As long as we have faith in calculus and all these things, science, and we'll never reach Krishna, because science will never reach Krishna. By its very nature, science will never reach Krishna, because science means to try to measure and classify everything. But Krishna is immeasurable, so it's chasing the dog chasing after his tail. You'll never catch it. You always think you're going to catch it, but you'll never catch it. It's not possible. So stop trying to catch the tail and just accept that we're the dog of Krishna's dog. That's all.